Welcome to Paint Ed. Hey, I'm Chris Schenk, the education guy at the Painting Contractors Association, providing painting contractors with the training and connections they need to grow their business. To find out more, visit pdca.org. Hey, I'm Chris Schenk, the education guy at the Painting Contractors Association, providing painting contractors with the training and connections they need to grow their business. To find out more, visit pdca.org. On this episode of Paint Ed, we have Nick LaGrasso and Matt Orsino with us from SNL Painting in St. Louis, Missouri. They came into the studio to share a little business story called How Nick Found Matt. It starts something like this. Nick owned a growing painting business that one day became too big for one person to run. Sounds like a lot of contractors out there. So Nick found Matt, who is now his production manager. I have so many questions. How did Nick find him? How does Nick use him? How can other owners find their own Matt? Answers to these questions and more coming right up. Hey guys, welcome to Paint Ed.
Thanks for having us, Chris.
How are you doing, Chris?
Very good. It's a beautiful day here in St. Louis, Missouri. You guys are here in St. Louis, Missouri with SNL Painting, and you're actually in studio talking to us about some things. But first of all, how's things going? How's business?
First, I just wanted to say it's good to be back.
Oh, right. Yes.
It
with
is.
With the That's How I Feel About It show.
This is how I feel about it. That's all it is.
People are getting
it's just
used
advice.
To that.
Do whatever you want to do.
But that's how I feel about it.
But it's truly how I feel about it. Or I wouldn't say it.
So business going good?
Business is good, yeah.
Well, we made a promise to ourselves that we would continue a topic that we started not so long ago, and that was the topic of getting a production manager and how that changed your life.
Correct. And in fact, we even led into it on our last podcast. That's how committed we were.
That's right.
Yeah, it was like to be continued at the end of Back to the Future.
This is
we
got
to do this.
This is going to be good. We have your production manager with us. So, Matt, thanks for joining us, by the way.
No problem.
So we're going to find out from your perspective, what is it that you're doing so well? All right, so we're going to ask you to brag on yourself just a little bit. But Nick, tell us the place that you were in as a company that led you to believe that you were ready for this. Was it a good spot you were in there, Nick?
Well, as I had stated in the session before we started recording, and I'll kind of rehash that and we'll
I'm just asking you to repeat
up.
Everything you've already
I love
said.
It. I do. But I was saying in 13 is when Matt started working for the company as a painter. And 13 and 14, I think, were the first 2 years we did like right at $1 million each year. And I was doing pretty much everything myself as far as answering the phones. Of course, I wasn't doing all the painting. We had guys for that. About 8 or 9 of them, I guess, when you first started.
Yeah, about 8.
Yeah. I was doing the invoicing, the sales, the getting the paperwork out to the guys, fielding all the phone calls from the guys. But anyway, so we were doing like $1 million and I was doing all the admin, sales, and production myself, and it was just getting to the point where, I had small kids, didn't really have time. I was like tied to my phone, tied to the business, tied to clients calling. I said, something's got to give. So my good buddy, the turnover terminator, Art Snarzik, we all know what he does. He helps people hire the right people. So I started talking to him about this, and lo and behold, he has a method to figure out in your business what you need and what's the next step to kind of help move forward. So we sat down and we talked about everything that goes on in my business. From the time the phone rings till the time a check comes in and then what we even do after that. So all the steps, phone calls, scheduling, bids, setting appointments, paying bills, all that stuff. Wrote it all down. Talked about the things that I did, the things that I was good at, the things that I was bad at, things that I liked doing and things that I hated to do. And we made his position out of the stuff that I was bad at and hated to do.
Nice.
So what we did, it gets fun is because then Art, with his knowledge of people, is able to find a person who likes all that stuff that I'm terrible at and don't like. Like, how great is that? Right.
Beautiful.
And I can keep the things that I'm good at and like to do. So, I had always kind of had my eye on this guy, as doing this job, but, I wanted to go through Art's process and make sure it was going to work because that's what I said. I would never hire admin without doing that because there's a little science behind it and it helps. So I did that.
Can I ask you real quick? Would you call it a crisis when you were looking for this role, or was it just like, oh, I think I'm ready?
It wasn't a crisis, but I remember talking to Art saying, I will take a pay cut, whatever that guy is going to cost me, or go deliver pizza or something else because something's got to give. Yeah. He's like, oh man, you're going to be able to grow so much. I said, that's great. And really, that's great. I'm not being like facetious or sarcastic. But if it doesn't happen and it just makes my life easier, I'm okay with that too. Yeah. And actually, my goal was I was running like 5% too much in labor expense. And I figured 5% of $1 million is close to a production manager's salary. So I was like, if we can just find that, he pays for himself.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Which he kind of did. So that was good. Kind of figured that the money was already there if he could really just kind of find the losses in labor.
Okay.
So, and even if he didn't, I was okay with it. So, but I was, there was some hope there that we could grow. Maybe he could find some efficiencies with labor and I wouldn't want to slip my wrists anymore. It really wasn't that bad, but it was just, like I said, you know, I had small kids, still have small kids, but they were 5 years smaller or 3 years smaller, whatever that was. Okay. And, so anyway, we do the turnover terminator thing. And, actually I put the applications out to the entire company.
Okay.
I knew I wanted Matt, but I didn't want it to, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, isn't there some strategy there though to let a person, let them go for it. Let them win it. Right?
Absolutely. And I kind of wanted to see who bubbled to the top as well. Okay. You know, and actually we have another guy that still works for us that if I ever need another Matt, Matt gets hit by a bus. Matt decides to go do something else.
Or if you change your mind about
changes his mind. Hey, and you know,
I'm replaceable. Yeah. That's what it sounds like
and,
to me.
And he's not replaceable, but we have another guy who could do his job with proper training.
Nice.
So, and actually he'll end up being Matt's assistant. Sweet. Somehow when we work that out.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay, so there you were, and then how did you decide on Matt?
Well, we went through Art's process and went through. Actually, I interviewed the guys. They made them write a resume and why they thought they'd be good for the job, and told the ones that I didn't think were going to make it. I don't think we're suited for this. Leaning on Art's data, right? Mm-hmm. So it kind of got me out of that. Without having to hurt feelings,
right?
And then. I mean, Matt did kind of rise to the top as the ideal candidate, and there was a few things that Art thought Matt would have to work on, and we talked about those. If you remember in the back of the old shop, we had that conversation, and these are the things that are going to bother you. These are the things that are going to bother you about Nick. Mm-hmm. These are the things that are going to bother Nick about you, mm-hmm. and these are the things you're going to have to work on that aren't your strong suits. And we kind of started from there, and I think he coached us again a couple times.
Yes, he did a couple times. I remember that meeting well.
Yeah, sitting on buckets mm-hmm. in yep, the back of the shop.
Buckets.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool.
And then what I did is I threw him out to the wolves and said, go figure it out. Here's your job description.
And you had rightly assessed that he had the skills to survive that and to thrive in those conditions. And now he's your successful production manager.
Let me say this first. Is you started production management in like May, April?
Yeah, this is, I think, 3 years.
The rest of that year, I'm not going to say he did a bad job, but... The second year, he was really like able to stretch his legs and do a great job.
Okay.
And we got Estimate Rocket.
That, and I think a lot of building up confidence in the crew and the crew building confidence in me also.
Yeah. Well, see one of the peers all of a sudden be the boss. It's kind of weird.
Well, let me ask from your perspective, Matt. What was the build up to that for you? Did you feel like a readiness? Were you kind of waiting for something like this to happen? Up until that point, were you just like, hey, just happily doing your job and then I saw an opportunity?
No, you know, when I came in with Nick, I was doing my own thing, trying to keep up afloat. I was laid off from the last company I worked for, which I worked there for 14 years. Mm. I came in the background of painting. My dad and my uncle painted. Really, the structure that my family has taught me, I knew I didn't want to paint the rest of my life. I was good at it, mm-hmm. But I take a lot of pride and anxiety. I get a lot of anxiety over it. So when he came to me and said, hey, I'm looking for a production manager, I was like, this is... exactly what I could do. It's in my field. I know painting. And I wouldn't have to paint so much. So
there you go.
For me, it was a win-win.
Nice.
Yeah. Did you say something about your knees hurting or something?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've had a knee surgery, shoulders. I mean, painting does a number to your body.
Yeah. Yes. I always like hearing about people that are in the painting industry that who may not paint anymore, or even a lot of people don't care about painting. Some don't like painting. But they love being in a painting business because it's about, there's all kinds of different roles for different people. So there you were and you're thinking like, this would be a great opportunity for me. So talk to me about the challenges you faced when you were first put in that role and how you overcame those challenges and now you're thriving, it sounds like.
Yeah. Number one challenge was just to get all the guys on board. I've been painting with them every day.
Right.
You know, now that I'm their boss, they had to get some respect for me. And I think I gave that to them. When they worked with me, they kind of seen what my work ethic was. And, you know, I didn't let them ease off too much. I was pretty strict. Mm-hmm. And they probably noticed and seen that he does have some qualities for this position. Let's give him a shot. It didn't take too long. I mean, like you said, about a year. The guys just started, you know, I relate with them. I'll go out and work with them time to time. I think that's huge, you know, just to know, hey, this guy wants to get the job done. He's here for us to help. Mm. But yeah.
Can I add to that a little bit
sure.
too? I think after 6 or 8 months of having someone who is accessible, on top of it, responsive, right. where the owner wasn't as much, mm. where I would just kind of like send him a text back, handle it.
Right.
And then Matt could actually offer solutions, come on the job, bring them stuff, bring them ladders. You know what I mean? Coach them through some things that I didn't have time to do, really, or the inkling after we did, you know, the key accountabilities worksheet. Turns
right.
out that's not my strong suit. coaching a group of guys. I mean, you know, I could do it one-on-one, but it's just, it's not, you know, what I do. So I think they found that they could lean on Matt more and he could actually give them support where I kind of, everybody was a crew leader.
Okay. Yeah, that was the one thing you were not that good at.
No.
And with doing all that, and I couldn't imagine doing everything you were doing.
That's awesome. I love hearing you guys talk about that.
Right? A lot of faces,
interactions. Yeah. And you both.
Yeah, wish you could see the face. You should get like a shot of this. Like, no, that is not my thing.
You're both like resigned to that.
I talked about that in the last podcast. Yeah. I'm like, that's gross. Nobody wants to do that except this guy who I hired who does it. That's great.
So, yeah, and then yeah. like you said, the guys, they came around real quick because guess what? They were getting their info the night before instead of that morning of the mm-hmm. job.
Yeah, or a day or two before. Crazy mm-hmm. time.
Correct. Yeah, so it's more info. The more they know, the more happy they are.
Nice.
So that was the big difference when I came in.
Okay, and so how did he, what are some things he did to help that happen, to help facilitate you feeling like you were the point person? Where people weren't able to access him because you were the go-to now. So, I mean, he backed up, obviously. Anything else that helped you maneuver through that time?
They always have access to me. They just don't want the access to me because Matt is a much better go-to.
Huh.
I mean, really, it's like he's on the ground every day, knows what's going on, can answer questions, you know, better support, like I said. And a lot of times I'll be like, well, did you talk to Orsino? Because I don't know. I mean, I just own the joint. I don't do anything. So.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. But
they love me. They do.
Oh, look at this guy.
Well, they do. I mean,
yeah.
They love to have their work order. They love to know, hey, the paint's already going to be there waiting on us. I don't have to get there. And well, it doesn't always happen that way, but most of the time they know I got their back and I am a production manager. And when you see the office stuff, yeah, doing the invoicing, calling the customers, scheduling. Just a ton of phone calls. But I am in the field, so I am getting my eyes on the jobs. And believe me, they need coaching. It ain't so much I'm telling them what to do, but I'm helping them throughout the process of a job or even talking to customers or even talking to their employees. Maybe they're having some problems at home. You know, I'm here. I'll coach them through it, help them out because, you know, anybody has problems at home, there's problems at work.
He didn't know he was a therapist, too.
I'm a therapist.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep.
Right. Sounds like you're really enjoying it.
Yeah, I do.
Sounds like you both are, like, just really thrilled about this arrangement.
Well, and, you know, when I talked about hiring and culture, I mean, he's a big part of the culture.
Mm.
Because you talk a lot of these owner-operator companies that have, you know, somewhere between 3 and 10 painters, and it is that one guy, and they hate to bother you because they know I'm busy out selling stuff or doing invoices, returning phone calls, whatever. I mean, that's what Matt's for. He's mm-hmm. for support for the guys.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's just kind of a better feeling. And that's one of the things I sell on Craigslist when I look for employees is we got a support system.
Nice.
Hired a guy just to support you.
Wow.
Yeah. You didn't need to mess with me. I got a guy.
That's
so,
pretty cool.
Yeah. No, it's great.
Okay. So guys, how do people, okay, think of business owners who probably are ready for it. How do they know? Not just from your own experience, but I mean, what would you have to say by way of advice for people to know when they're there and to know what to do next?
I would say when you're, you know, I would say that the dollar indicator is about that $1 million point. I mean, unless you are Iron Man, which, you know, there's guys in town like Jim from City Star. He's never had any help. Does it all himself, whether he was running 20 guys or 6.
Yeah.
I'm not that guy. And I wanted the business to be kind of scalable. So we're going to need me to be out of the mix.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the analogy I use is you go to McDonald's, you could care less who the franchisee is. You just want your burger.
Right.
When they call my company, I just want them to get a good paint job. They don't have to know me.
Mm.
So in order to do that, I got to separate myself, you know, from every single facet of the business.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're to the point where you want to scale it or when you're ready to grow and you can't, or you're having anxiety attacks, you know what I mean? Or your wife's yelling at you because you don't see your kids play soccer.
Heart attack.
Or a heart attack. God, right. If you're having a heart attack, go to the nearest emergency room. Do not call Chris Shank. Do not listen to it. Put the podcast on pause. It'll be here.
I can help.
So go to the ER. Anyway. But I mean, really, it's just when you kind of feel like, you know, you're sick of where you were, at least this is from my perspective, just how I feel about it. That's it. then it's time, you know, to go. It's like, all right, so this year we're going to go from the million to 1.3 or 1.7 or 2.1 is our goal this year.
Nice.
You need help or okay. you're going to not like what you're doing.
Okay.
Unless, like I said, you're that occasional Iron Man, and there's a few of them out there.
Okay. So Matt, let me ask you. How do people find people like you in their company? How would you say from what you've experienced and everything, how would they identify that this person has the potential to do that?
Well, you know, having a business degree and all that, that's great. I don't have none of that. So if you have a painter out there in your company and he's your crew leader and he's just your top guy, you give him work and he just runs with it. You don't have to worry about it. You have hardly any callbacks. He's that guy. You know, maybe start looking at that and those qualities they have, and maybe usually it's the leadership, how he's running those guys. If you can incorporate a painter into your production manager, I think that's beneficial for knowing process and knowing what the guys go through daily, just being a painter, knowing the stuff they hate, knowing the stuff they like doing. I think that has a lot to do with gelling.
Gotcha. Yep.
Can I tell you some things I saw in him that I thought would be great?
Sure,
so
you sure can, Nick.
So he was referred by a client. He's like, hey, I got this guy. He's out of work. You need to talk to him. Mm. And then he and I talked for a couple months, and I was like, hey, I'm not busy enough to bring you on yet, but I will. And he's like, cool. I got my own thing going on. Mm. And just after some conversations, I said to myself, this guy's either going to run my company or buy my company.
Is that right?
Yes.
Wow.
I knew.
Maybe like both.
Oh. Shush. I like much better running it than owning it. But we could talk about that in a couple of years. But I just kind of had the feeling, because I'm talking to Matt, and you know, you talk to a lot, and he's in it for the long game. I mean, he's going to be a painter. He's going to work for a paint company. That's what he was going to do, at least since I've known him. He didn't have plans to go to college. He wasn't writing a book. He didn't want to be an actor. He didn't want to move to New York. He wanted to be a painter.
Right.
So I know he's going to be in the industry. He was serious about it. He turned in his work on time, as I would allow via the estimates or you know, or unless something went awry, but he always made the people happy.
That's number one.
So that is now, hang on. Key. And he's also ridiculously conscientious. Like anytime he would screw something up, which was few and far between, it's like he didn't sleep that night.
Nice.
So like, you know, he internalized everything and owned it. It was really, it's about ownership. He took ownership.
Got messed up in the head. I like that.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. The anxiety I was talking about.
It's about that anxiety.
Because I don't.
So what you need to hire is an anxious person that's worried about everything all the time. That's your production manager.
Nice.
Maybe, maybe not.
Okay.
But I just kind of knew. I mean, you know, like I said, he took ownership of everything, very conscientious, got along with the clients, got along with the other painters.
So should people be looking for that kind of a thing when they're hiring, thinking, hey, not just is this a good painter, but is this somebody that can grow up with the other painters and also demonstrate some other skills that could lead them to crew leadership? Eventually, does some managerial roles.
Yeah, we got a half a dozen great painters that could not remotely do Matt's job.
Gotcha.
Just because you can cut a straight line and have pretty brush strokes doesn't mean you can run $2 million of production. Right. I mean, it's a different thing.
So it's interesting where you're almost hiring somebody who may be good enough as a painter, but you have a view to them becoming something beyond, but they kind of have to go through those normal channels almost.
Sure. And let me say this too, is like guys like you and then Luke was the other one I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
They have a process to everything they do. Hmm. Like you go look at their trucks, they're organized.
Hmm.
They turn in their paperwork the same way, the same time. They do their jobs the same way. They call at the same time every day. They have a process. So they can repeat that process with 6 or 8 or 10 crews, and then you might have a production manager.
Nice. Yeah. So what about when it comes to shared leadership? Okay, so there is a giveaway kind of thing, like I trust you with my company. Mm-hmm. You even said, like, I don't have to be known by everybody. Is that kind of a little bit of a shift? When you're used to being the person, and what happens when you're not the person and you have to kind of step back and share leadership? And I've heard people refer to like letting your employees become owners in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
Employees as owners. Like how do you feel about that whole thing?
It's fantastic. Because I mean, yeah, it's my company, but I and Matt may attest to this. I never say you work for me. You work for the company. Like it's mm-hmm. weird to me to say you work for me
mm-hmm.
because we are an entity, and I know without him and Judy that works in the office and our other salesperson and the 21 or 19 or whatever the number is today. 20 painters
today.
I couldn't do this. And I understand that. So yeah, my name's on it. I assume all the risk and pay all the bills, but without our team, our AKA family really is what it is. It wouldn't happen. So I don't have any problem with people leaning on Matt at all and not, you know, and I want to know them. I want to know all their names. I could probably write them down on a piece of paper, but I couldn't just rattle all 19 off. I mean, and it's kind of refreshing. So yeah.
Matt, thoughts on if let's suppose there are crew leaders or even painters who are listening, or their, let's just say their manager or the boss is, you know, saying, hey, listen to this podcast. This is what I want for you. Or, you know, be thinking about something like this so you can grow up into different roles. What would you say to people? You know, they may not be listening to this, but I want managers and business owners to hear you say this to the employees. Okay. If that makes any sense.
Yes.
What would you have to say to them to say, this is how you develop as, you know, with a view towards that kind of a leadership? This is the kinds of things that you need to be paying attention to. Is that a fair?
Yeah, I can answer that completely. Well, it goes back when I was painting. Like Nick said, I was organized. I had to have everything on my truck, no matter what job we did that day. And like I said, Nick sometimes was giving us that info that morning. But
it was usually before 6.
Right.
Just so you know, there's ample time. It was before 6 a.m. I get a text. Hey, dude. I'm like, oh, yeah, sorry, I forgot. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I had the anxiety. I wanted to make sure I have everything on my truck. And customer service, just basically communicating as much as needed makes my life easier. I know what's going on. So when I went going to a job, customers, you know, talking to the customers, making sure they knew exactly what was going on, communicating with Nick when the job was done, where we're at on time. If you painters out there are doing really well with that, you know, you don't even have to be the greatest painter, but man, if you are very good at talking to customers and very detail oriented, cleaning up messes, you know, when I say clean up messes, protecting everything you do, even though some of you are the best painters in the world and won't get paint on anything, but just that visual that homeowners see, and you go that little extra mile, like I tell some of the guys, you know, it's not a bad thing to bring up the dumpster to the house, you know, not walking through the grass. We always say being mindful. Mm-hmm. I was very mindful, and I always, if you are out there and that kind of person, you're very mindful and detail oriented and very good at talking with customers, that is in the right direction completely. Mm. Communication is huge.
Nice.
That's probably the biggest key.
Probably number one. So as long as people know what's going to happen to them, they're usually okay with it.
So I want, first of all, if there are painters and people, crew leaders listening, take that advice. I would say follow that, develop in that way if you have those inclinations. I would also say to employers, use that language when you're talking to your employees and crew leaders to start developing that anticipation for people kind of that want to grow up into leadership. Use that, because what better way than to hear it straight from you who said, this is what grew me up. This is what I was looking for. This is what Nick was looking for. So I want owners and managers to start using that language to start identifying people who have those skills in that company. But anyway, so I love it. Thanks for showing up and sharing. That's
no problem, helpful. Chris.
Yeah. And I know, it may not be your opinion, but it's definitely Nick's opinion.
It's just the way I feel about it, Chris.
I got to hit at least 4 or 5
And I can say by the look on Matt's face, he's ready to do this again. So you need to find something else that he can talk about. And that way I don't even have to do these anymore. See what I'm saying? I can just sub it out to my guys. I have people for that. I don't do that, Chris.
So you can just sit here and not talk. They'll just talk for you.
I don't do anything. It's the goal. It doesn't happen yet. That's the goal. Actually, I'll feel weird if that ever really does. I'll have to do something else. But yeah.
Well, thanks guys for showing up to PaintEd.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
PaintEd podcasts are a product of the Painting Contractors Association. To find out more about upcoming education opportunities or for more information about joining PDCA and getting access to advanced resources for your business, visit pdca.org. We'll see you next time.
I can help.
Go to the ER.